there, I'm Subha, a career growth coach, and this is season 5 of Small Talk with Raincraft with...
I'm Hasita. I'm a marketing consultant at Motley Crue, and I'm so excited. Are we at season 5 already?
Can you believe it? Please do look us up and catch earlier episodes too. But let's get on with this one. Been a rough week, Hasita?
Yeah, it's been an interesting week. It's a bit of a family health emergency, and I think it's the first time that someone we're close to has gone through something like this. And how do you bounce back? I mean, just to let you know, the worst case scenario didn't pan out, let's put it that way. But for a week, it felt like it might as well have. It was quite interesting to see, you know, the same people who you've grown up with, who brought you up, suddenly take on very different roles when something like this hits. Yeah.
I think crisis teaches us a lot of things about ourselves and those around us.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it surprises us most of the time, I think.
Quite a bit. Just in terms of how I think sometimes people are able to step up and, you know, deal with stuff. And it's interesting. And tell me if there is coincidence there or not. But like, are all bankers just generally better prepared to handle the trauma of, you know?
Yeah, we are pretty much waiting for the worst to happen most of the time. And it does also. You're right. It's we see different sides of ourselves and others who we've been, you know, working with or living with for years on end. And who am I in a crisis is a very... interesting self-awareness question.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right, because I think this is the first time I've realized that in a crisis, I'm actually a really efficient follower.
Yeah. So let's get into a crisis together, because I love to lead in a crisis.
Oh, good. Or not. Please, I'm done. I don't want any.
If I look back at some of the horrendous things that have happened, which definitely qualify as a crisis, I mean, transactions gone wrong, client communication gone wrong, that Monday morning release gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little embarrassed to admit it, but I do look at it with a little bit of fondness. Because
only because it passed, let's be honest.
Yeah. Not always with the best of outcomes, but I know that I genuinely thrive in such situations. It takes some bit of looking back to think about what were those traits, right? Just to, you know, put labels on it. I think definitely in a crisis, you need somebody to emerge as a leader.
Yeah.
Right? You need, hence, followers because they can't be walking alone, right? So there are managers who step up, like you said, and become leaders. And there are managers who continue to be managers.
Yeah.
Right? And I've also seen those who... completely crash and burn.
Yeah, I mean, in this situation, we had one of each. I can see that now. Yeah, but the funny thing is, there is value to each of those traits and behaviors.
Yeah,
because anyway, I'm just thinking, like, you know, the crash and burn situation. Well, it's not ideal in a crisis. Maybe these are people who do well in a stable state. You know, like, I mean, some of us enjoy dealing with crisis situations to the point where it may not seem very exciting to not have one every other day. But then there has to be someone who gets excited about just coming in and turning on the switch every morning as well, right?
So true, so true. That, and that's really what I experienced with some kind of a system-wide, market-wide glitch across the stock market and banks and everything. There was something that went down. And I witnessed like a colleague who was so good at his day job, so to speak, completely just give up on that day. And, you know, some of us took over some of the things that he knew how to do. But just that the enormity of the situation, he decided this is not what I want to be doing or enjoy doing or what I think I can, you know, help us get to the other side of, etc. But that took nothing away from who he was on every other day, and came in with amazing energy, enthusiasm, ideas, execution, all of that. So
I think maybe when pushed to a corner, all behavior is irrational, and that's fair. There's nothing wrong with, you know, you're reacting.
Correct. No, we are all going to respond in very, very different ways, whether it's personal or, you know, something at the workplace. And maybe also not to put too much of judgment on it, right? It's a situation that came, different people reacted differently.
Yeah.
And it you can say, yeah, it does reveal some bit of who they are, and but it's who they are in that situation.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, I suddenly had this image of when there's this fire in a kid's party and George Costanza is the first one to push all the kids and run out the door. You know, like self-preservation.
It's a powerful instinct. And I'm just also thinking, you've spoken about leadership in a crisis. But typically in the day-to-day running of something, you're not hiring for crisis management.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Or you're not starting something assuming crisis will happen. Right.
So true. That's interesting. Like you hire somebody for a set of skills and you want them to really create those new products and build the teams and run the company. And when we're talking crisis, we're talking something of slightly larger intensity, not the day-to-day you know, struggles and challenges, but when something large hits the organization or the team or the family unit, you are then now expecting this person to excel in that situation also.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So I think the best of organizations and units prepare well for these situations.
Which kind of is where I'm kind of coming from as well, because business as usual is a concept in large organizations. Startups, smaller teams, where really the focus is on the skill set and doing things faster. Yes, there is a certain amount of grit and resilience. But I don't know that startups are prepared for crisis of an external variety.
Mm.
Right? And I don't mean lack of funding. That is still very much an internal problem. But how many startups have plans for things like, okay, tomorrow morning I wake up and like the need for that business doesn't exist? Because when you've hired people with the intent of them doing a job and doing a job well, where does that characteristic or that trait really make itself felt? And how do you, I mean, let's say, for example, you want to find out, what do you do?
Mm. Yeah, maybe that's why the more established places have very good testing processes or, you know, contingency testing is part of their calendar.
Right.
Like, you know that once a quarter you're going to test for, like, kind of like having that building fire drill, right? Which is also very telling, right? The guys who immediately shut down and walk down the stairs quietly versus the lady who tries to say, hey, it's okay, it's not a real fire, no? I'll finish this call or I'll finish this email. Like you said, in banking, all of that testing and general high level of preparedness made it a lot easier when some of those things actually panned out, which they did. We're not testing for things which will never happen in our lifetime. Right? There will be times when networks are down, when your building is, you know, in a zone where there's a flood and you can't reach it, or when 3-4 employees of a crucial team went on a picnic and they all fell ill and nobody's there on a Monday morning. So having tested it again and again brought you to a level of pretty strong preparedness. At least you didn't panic. There was a plan, a very detailed hard copy printed playbook, right?
Yeah.
To say, hey, in these situations, this is what you can do. And even during the course of work, I think we were always thinking about what's the plan B? Right? Today, I'm doing it. If I don't come in tomorrow, who else knows how to do it? Right? And that kind of thinking really, really helped when the situations actually arose. And you're right, in startups, it's a lot tougher. Even for you, think about it. Like, if you have two writers and a designer and you, and two of the four don't turn up, it's a crisis.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But these are skill sets which you have somewhere practiced to step in for.
Makes sense, yeah. Which kind of brings me to, can you build for becoming a leader in a crisis? Is that possible, or are you, because we are talking about something very fundamental here, right? Like, it's not a, you know, it really is that visceral response, as we call it, the whole body kind of reaction to situations, right?
So true. So maybe either you have that, like, you know, I feel like sometimes I would be the one who runs towards the fire in the organizational context. You know, if you're in a leadership role, you are expected to run towards the building or stay put in the building and help put out the fire. It may come naturally to you, or you have to break it down to, hey, what are the 2-3 things that are important that I may not, it may not be a, you know, something I enjoy doing or even it, or something that I'm comfortable doing, but these are the steps.
Right.
And I've, you know, kind of rehearsed it in the mind, or there's a playbook, or it's expected of me that I will communicate that one, I'm in charge. Because that is so helpful in a crisis. If every, because 99% are followers, managers, and the 2-3 who have also crashed by the wayside, but they want to know whom to listen to.
Yeah, I think a lot of, yes, you're right. Like the freezing response in situations like this comes from not knowing as well.
Yeah. Who's going to tell us what to do? Or am I supposed to decide what to do? So if someone says, hey, this, we follow this person, which doesn't always have to be the leader of the pack.
Yeah.
Right. So if you are as a leader, as a founder, as a team manager, not so comfortable in these situations, part of your preparation could be identifying the person who will take charge.
That's interesting.
Right? It doesn't have to be the CEO. You could have a crisis manager. Could be their, whatever, part-time job.
Yeah.
Assuming, you know, they don't need to step into that too often. If it's a full-time job, you have another problem. But that, and then, and hence the next biggest thing is, how are you communicating? How are you telling people that you've taken charge, or that, hey, it's okay, we've got this. It's not going to be easy, but we'll figure it out.
It's quite interesting because literally most of the time the word crisis is followed by the word PR, right?
Like,
I mean,
So I think, for example, George Bush got a positive PR spin when he was sitting and reading to kindergarten kids and he was told that 9/11 has just happened. And he didn't panic. He didn't jump out of his seat. He finished what he was doing. And that has been quoted many times as, you know, very, very powerful and powerful crisis leadership. He did the right thing.
To not freak out.
To not freak out.
But it's interesting. I don't know what layers and dimensions are there to that. But when I think Queen Elizabeth II tried to do the same in the wake of Princess Diana's passing, it was the exact opposite.
Because and the missing piece there was the communication. I think the PR machinery,
the stiff upper lip.
The PR machinery didn't put it out that, yes, she is upset, but and she's also the queen and she's also whatever. So, no, very true. I think it's the communication that is critical. Many times, so I've had instances in my career where things have gone woefully wrong. Somebody downstream in the team, oops, and you know the repercussions are much larger than that oops, and there was a kind of string of stuff which, you know, Murphy's law, like one
compounds
after the other and whatever, and I ended up writing a lot of these, you know, very apologetic mails to senior management saying this is what happened, this is the root cause, this is the impact in some cases. And in large organizations you'll have, you know, very detailed grid of, you know, who all have to approve, and sometimes it goes up really to the top, and it became something that became like a skill set almost. That for the few years after that, I would have like senior folks, even sometimes in another department, saying, hey, can you help us draft that email, because when you send it, one, people believe you, and two, they don't seem to question too much because you cover everything that they would want to know.
That's interesting, right? Because I think crisis communication is not just about saying everything. Right? I think so many times, especially when there are people who are in that freeze response, saying too much is a much bigger problem, right? And it causes its own sub-fires in different places.
Especially in family situations, right? Who all do you tell? How much do you tell? Because suddenly everyone's panicked and everyone's caught a flight and come over. And now you have to tend to them more than the crisis itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, crisis leadership is really about that. I think it's about, one, clarifying who's in charge, communicating in a very consistent and concise and comprehensive manner. And also, you know, one of the things that I always used to get positive feedback about from my team was that if we came and told you that we did something wrong, your first reaction was to fix that, right? As opposed to saying, how could you do this? Why did you do this?
Yeah.
And, you know, blaming the individual or even questioning. And that gave us a lot of confidence to come to you because the focus was on solving the problem.
Right.
Right. Because finally,
that's what you want.
Right? Despite who did what, the problem needs to be solved. And in our kind of job, there was always a timeline, like a deadline to it. You had to do it within the next 2 hours or next 3 hours, or the repercussions or the implications were even larger. So, you know, focusing on the problem rather than the people. But afterwards, doing as a group a very, very detailed postmortem.
You know, what's interesting to me is that you talk about this as though a crisis should be expected. Is that just the banker in you?
Yeah, I think because whether you expect it or not, it's coming. And my thought process has always been like, if you're running like an operations shop, or you're running a team, or you're running a set of processes, there are humans sitting there. So what are the chances that you get it right each and every time? Things are going to go wrong, right? So
still can't accept it, but cognitively makes sense.
And intuitively, that's what we tell. We don't say it enough in the workplace, and we actually used to keep reiterating that, please escalate. Right? I had a super boss who used to keep saying, please make it my problem. Like, I don't want to be surprised by something.
Yeah.
So tell me if something has gone wrong. Right? And then we all collectively figure out what to do. And that's intuitively what you want at home, right? You're telling your kids, like, tell me, like, don't try to overmanage it. Don't try to fix it yourself.
Because and then catch me off guard. Yeah.
So I think these are a few of the things where, I mean, sometimes you have it in you, but be okay with the fact that there are different roles people play. And, you know, it's a good thing that we all don't want to be the leader in a crisis.
Yeah, seriously.
It's a really good thing. That's one situation where you're happy that a ton of people just want to follow. They just want instructions. They give you that immediate anchor.
Yeah, definitely. Like,
these are the steps to be followed, right? And so even I don't have to... I think many times it's like it's a brain freeze for a lot of people. And the playbook helps you tide through that. Like, I don't have to think. I just have to read and do, kind of.
Fair enough. Instructions are there.
I mean, we've seen, like, with all the binging we've done of something like a Grey's Anatomy, the minute that...
How many crises, no? Like, that place runs on crisis almost.
I think the minute that, you know, somebody rolls in on the journey or whatever, like... You know that there's a protocol, and after a period of time, we only know what to say.
yeah. No, in fact, I was thinking about all the meta crisis in that show, where every 10 episodes, someone's dying.
Yeah.
Quite prepared.
No, so I think maybe that as leaders, or even as just people in a team, in a family, in any unit, and we're all part of so many such things, know who you are and be okay with it.
Yeah. Like, don't get in the way of people who are trying to move things forward.
So if you're a good follower, a good executor, then play that role well and look to see who's the leader and how can I best support it. If you're the leader, keep trying to see what you can do better each time, but, you know, do what you do well.
Fair enough.
And if you crash and burn by the side, it's okay. That's how you are in that occasional crisis that comes along.
Yeah, the rest of the time you're doing, you know, pretty good, so... Yeah.
Don't beat yourself up.
Don't spread rumors.
Correct. Yeah. Don't bring down those who did a good job finally.
Interesting. I hope to never see a crisis again for the rest of my life, if I could. I know you hope the opposite. So you know who to call. If something is going wrong, there's somebody here who will step in with great joy. And please do. I think... Somehow, the banking folks just seem to be really good at it somehow.
I sound like a psychopath.
You sounded that way from the time you were listening to True Crime Podcast. That didn't give it away.
So true. So that's all, folks. Catch you next time. Thanks for listening. Please do remember to share, subscribe, follow, and do leave us a nice rating or review. It really helps us move up the charts and reach more and more small talkers. Bye.